Let's do this.
In general, for nail care, just like with skincare, most of the times before you recognize that something serious is going on in your body, oddly enough, you see it in your nails. We find that most of the damage that our skin sustains is before we even hit 18.
On point.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of On Point. I'm your host, Taylor Burke, and in today's episode, we have the youngest nail technology license holder in the United States, and the global educator for Aesthetic Institute of Portland. Give a warm welcome to Monique Rabb. Hi, Monique.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us today. I'm so excited. That is so awesome that you were featured in the magazine Nails as the youngest ever nail technology license holder. How old were you?
I was 11.
You were 11?
Yeah, 11 years old.
You were allowed to get your license that young?
Yes, the state of Oregon didn't have an age requirement. And since that wasn't there to hold me up, I just went ahead and went and got my license.
Okay, so 11 years old. Are you in sixth grade?
Yeah, I was in sixth grade.
Oh my. Okay, so I want to know more about this. How did this happen? So like in middle school, were you also working on the side? Like tell us the whole scoop.
No, actually it was a funny story. My mom and dad had a business here, a skincare school. And that summer, my dad wanted me to go visit his family in South America. So we went and we ended up staying a little bit too long into the school year, you know? And when we came back, my parents were sad that I had missed so much of the year that they really wanted me to take a summer school class, but they weren't offering it. So they thought the next best thing that I could do is come to school. At least I'd work on my proficiency in reading. And then when they started researching licensing requirements, they found that there was no age requirement. So I just kind of trucked on and started doing the hands-on training. And I was so really welcomed by the students that were there. Looking back, I would think, wow, an 11-year-old with, you know, 18 to 30-year-olds is kind of crazy. But they were all really supportive of me. And I just, you know, went through the course and walked up to the state and asked to take my license, and they all kind of paused and were like, you're 11. You know, they definitely asked a lot of questions, checked in, and gave me a bit of a hard time to get the license, but ultimately they couldn't hold me back. So I ended up getting it, and it was a cool summer job that I had, and I practiced throughout the years in nursing homes, then eventually started my own business.
Oh my gosh. How did you feel being the youngest?
It was, for me, it's different. I grew up in that setting. So for me, I was just it always has been my safe place. So it didn't feel any different. I think that it was really kind of them to let me start practicing them at first, because of course, anybody going into a new trade, it's scary picking up those skill sets, but a little bit more daunting when you're, you know, a child.
Do you think that helped you that your parents were the ones that owned the school?
It definitely helped. I was there after school. I would come in and say hello to everybody. I think we used to joke around that I was the in-house receptionist from the time I was 3 on, because I'd like to meet and greet everybody. But it definitely made the process easier for sure.
Was not expecting 11 years old. Like, you're a baby. That's crazy. How was it getting clients? Yes, I know you said that you only worked during the summers, but were people like, oh, I don't want her because she's too young when they came to you?
They were. They definitely taking student clients was difficult. My mom would be really good about asking her friends to come in. And then eventually when she felt more comfortable with my skill sets, because first off, student work isn't always the best when they start out. But again, I was young. And so she was a little bit harder on me. She had the same expectations that she would have for any of her students going through schooling. But she made sure I practiced on close friends and family members first, and then started talking to clients if they felt comfortable for me taking them. And once they started, you know, to see the quality of work that I was putting out, they had no problem coming back and ultimately became my longtime clients.
After you went through school and graduated high school, you decided to open up your own thing.
I started with my nail license. Then when I was 12, I got my aesthetics license, and 18 for my electrology license. And I kind of clustered them together and had my own little business. And it's what put me through college.
What do you mean, like, your own business? Like, people came to you for one of those things? Like, you didn't actually work at like a
spa or a salon?
Yeah.
It is not easy for people to hire you when you're that young. So no, I had to start my own. I had to be flexible with my time and my hours. And I really wanted to be able to dictate the services that I was going to offer. So I kind of fell in love with nails and lashes. And then I really got into acne treatments for skincare. And then permanent hair removal was another thing that just kind of felt pretty natural to jump into. And yeah, I started my own business and worked at it for 10 years before expanding.
Monique, what a story. kind of like you mentioned, you grew up being around the beauty industry because of your parents and your mom was an esthetician. That allowed you to be like in the know and see changes in the industry. What changes do you remember seeing?
I think probably the thing that I remember the most is the growth of the aesthetics industry. I remember my very first facial as a kindergartner, and then I remember comparing it to the services that were coming in. So I feel like it was definitely more fluff and buff, more of a relaxation treatment, heavy focus on the cosmetic treatments. So a little bit more light-handed. And then I remember starting to see clinical technicians working more for corrective acne or pigmentation, working with acids. And I remember thinking that basically they're just very closely aligned with dermatology and correction. And so I watched that change basically the last 15 years and really kind of opened a whole new pathway for estheticians.
Why do you think that, you know, skincare has grown so much over the years?
I think overall the education in the US, just like a lot of things, we're kind of slow to come to market. In Europe, in many other countries, skincare is just considered part of general healthy living styles, you know, lifestyles. So it's more of a staple and there's more education and resources that are put into it. But also the product development side has changed so much and people are just seeking different alternatives, whether that's corrective skincare or a more holistic approach. I think that's really allowed the industry to grow.
Who's ahead of us? And like, what are they doing? Like, what do we need to catch up on?
I love watching European trends. I mean, they're the first for the BB Glow facials. The obsession in 2020 was real for me. Watching the infusion of cosmetics and pigmentation into the skin, kind of a combination of superficial tattooing. I mean, in the more medical aesthetics realm, we're seeing expansion in services for different laser devices and treating different skin conditions. And it's just more accessible to people. There's more knowledge about it to the general public. So I think that idea of feeling like you're stuck in the skin you're in is kind of gone. We're able to customize and tailor and treat our conditions and feel better about ourselves as a whole. And I think that for me also, being a part of the industry myself and really taking for granted my mom's career. You know, I really assumed that there was always a better way than what she was teaching me. And to find out years later, actually, you know, she's right. This is a process to get through acne. There's no quick pill that's going to fix me because I've done the Retin-A's and I've done the Accutanes. And then I've been on the other side of it being like, now I have to treat my entire body and try and restore the balance of my skin. And that took years.
Right.
So to be able to walk clients through that education, it's such a great feeling to let them know I've been where you've been. And if you just trust me and stay on this ride with me, I'm going to help you get to what you're looking for.
So Monique, did you tell your mom that, like, mom, you were right? Like, did she hear those words from you?
I don't think I've said it enough. There were some times where, you know, you, mom and daughter going at it, I'd be like, you're wrong, fighting, don't touch me. Of course, she's trying to help me with my acne. I'm like, no, swatting her away. But yeah, I've absolutely said you were right. And it doesn't get easier.
Did she love hearing that?
She does. She still loves hearing it.
I feel like what woman doesn't love hearing you are right?
I know.
So with the industry, I know we are saying that it's changed so much in the last 10, 15 years. But tell me, Monique, and tell the listeners, what is the industry lacking?
I really still think it goes back to education, the ability to talk about the conditions. I feel like there's almost a stigma or a shame associated with beauty and health that people don't feel open enough to talk about it. And because they don't want to talk about it, there's not a lot of research that they're getting access to. So just the overall access to services and that misinformation that self-care isn't selfish and it's also not superficial. So I feel like people think that they're being indulgent in treating themselves when in reality it's just maintenance.
Let's be real, the price point sometimes isn't there for all of us. Some of them, like getting a facial these days, is sometimes over $100 or, you know, even way more than that. Do you see the price point being easier for consumers or other alternatives? What are you thinking on that?
So as people, the demand for the services go up, you're going to see kind of a plateau with prices. That's what you see in the European market. It's why so many people do it, because it's more accessible. So there's a higher volume of client, which is allowing them the prices to be a little bit lower in some cases. But there's so many different ways that you can get a service. You know, educational institutions are a great option. For example, there are training facilities for nurses that are working with Botox and learning the injectable skills. There's the training facilities for advanced estheticians that are learning lasering treatments. And it's normally a tenth of the cost. So I do want to say, like, be cautious of what you choose. Put your time and research into where you're going. And I think reviews are something that clients should always be double checking with. But a great gauge of it is always, you know, finding a friend that has a connection to that. So we have, for example, in our facility, 45 different services that we offer currently.
Wow.
And they range in price from a $7 tint all the way up to laser resurfacing that is retailing for anywhere between $7 to $1,400 professionally for $150. So we're happy in our position to be able to bring clients in and do consultations with them and make sure that they feel safe before they even start that process. I don't believe in working on mannequins just because your mannequin can't tell you how you're doing, but we start on each other internally. We test out our skill sets, and all schools have those tests to make sure that people are proficient. There's always going to be some error, but that happens professionally anyway. So I think actually being in an educational facility is going to, if anything, get you a safer result at a fraction of the price with experts that are leading these students.
That even like reminds me too, like it's not just esthetician schools. Doctors have to go through this too. Right? They all need people to practice on. So, I mean, it's a whole industry that I guess I haven't even really thought about.
Yeah, it is kind of funny now that you say that, like, especially when you're thinking about the medical field. Personally, when I went in and had my first child, I didn't really know that I could say no to a student. And so when they say they're coming with a student, they mean a fleet of them. So if we're comfortable having a student doctor assist you with labor and delivery, like, why is the standard so different for a facial?
Right. So I read a little bio on you, Monique, and I just want to make sure, did I read that correctly, where you look at the skin in more of a medical perspective because of your mom?
I think I like to. I wouldn't necessarily say medical. I would say clinical. The way that I view the skin is assessing the entire body and how it works. It's just a compilation of a whole bunch of organs that work together. And if you're just superficially looking at the surface down and what you're seeing directly on the skin without taking that into consideration, it really stifles the kind of results that you can get.
Tell me the difference in like what they are.
I think a lot of it goes to the setting and the type of services that you're going to combine to get those results. So when we're talking about clinical, it's just, we try and step away from the word medical for legal purposes, I guess is the best way to put it. So you're going to see that clinical or med spa switched out quite a bit, and it can be really confusing. But we're looking at, again, more refined issues that we're dealing with. So think about inflammatory acne or severe scarring and pigmentation versus treating somebody for fine lines and superficial irritations in the skin. So things that are going to take more documented treatments versus one or two.
What do you prefer treating?
I always like to go in hard, I guess I would say. I think it really just depends on the season of life that you're in. When I was younger, I really appreciated the fancy, fluffy, nice, heavy massage. And I still love those from time to time. But the reality is, I just don't have a lot of free time anymore. So I want to figure out the service that is going to give me the best results in the smallest amount of time that I can physically be in a treatment.
Right.
Even if that requires a couple of days of downtime.
Right.
When I say a couple of days, it can be anywhere between 3 to 15 days. Just about a month ago, my face was completely swollen from being resurfaced.
What did you do?
Oh, I did a 1540 laser resurfacing, which helps for me treat my past acne scarring because I'm very self-conscious about it still and some of the pigmentation that I have. And so I always feel like a newborn baby 15 days after I have that service, but it's not for everyone.
What does that do?
It's a laser. And essentially what we're doing is we're making micro injuries in the skin. So if you can think similar to microneedling, but done with a laser beam. So there's a lot more heat and inflammation with that. You can literally see the points where we have treated. So I always say I look like pop art afterwards because you can see thousands of tiny little holes through my face. And then the swelling that can occur with that service, a lot of people like to hide. I don't personally care. I wear it like a badge of honor because I get so many questions and people being like, girl, what did you do? I want it too.
How's the pain level?
It's tolerable. I have a pretty high pain level, but I've had plenty of clients say it's less painful than IPL. Day 1 to 5 is not the prettiest. That's probably the brunt of it.
And does one session make it like completely better, or this is something that you have to go multiple times?
I mean, the best way I explain any kind of aesthetic service is it's just like going to the gym. You can't work out once and get to your goal body. You have to maintain it, and it takes some work to get in there. So even with more aggressive services like this, I would strongly suggest like a series of 3 treatments scheduled anywhere between 4 to 8 weeks apart from each other, depending on the person. And then you would want to maintain that at least once a year, but you can maintain it with other services too that are at a different price point or even more frequently.
That's good to know. Something that we kind of touched on in the beginning and I'm really excited to talk to you about is corrective skincare. You mentioned, and on your website, and if you go on TikTok or social media, corrective skincare is the leading field in aesthetics right now. So it sounds self-explanatory, like you're correcting your skin, but kind of talk to us about what that is and why you believe it's the leading field right now.
I believe it's the leading field just because all of us are aging at the same rate, right? And so with the aging process, we're starting to see the breakdown of our skin. Really, our ideal clients are anywhere between the ages of 18 and up, just because we're seeing a little bit more of that change, I would say, the sudden drop of estrogen in our skin. So corrective skincare right now, what people are really looking at are for full rejuvenation. So wrinkles, pigmentation, treatment of static lines in their forehead. And typically, those treatments are going to be more acid-based. There are other treatments that you can use for corrective skincare. Acne falls into that category as well. It's just that I believe that the acids are the most popular treatment right now because they're so accessible.
Are these like topicals?
Yeah. So a topical treatment with something like glycolic acid or salicylic acid can be used to treat anything from acne to pigmentation. You can get them over the counter. So if you're a consumer, a lot of people will talk to a professional retailing center, but they can also go to places like Ulta or Sephora and find a daily glycolic treatment to help brighten their skin. On the clinical side, it's just really, it's part of standard training at this point.
Right. People are so shocked that 18-year-olds are so focused on your skin, you have to start taking care of it early.
Yeah. And actually documented with through clinical research, we find that most of the damage that our skin sustains is before we even hit 18, especially when it is thinking about sun damage. Because who's outside more? Children. Children are outside more, right? So they're heavily educating now about the importance of sunscreen daily for children. I know as a child, I remember being told to apply sunscreen, but not the way that it is now. Even in childcare facilities, they have like a very specific routine of how they're applying SPFs to make sure that these kids aren't getting too much sun exposure or burnt.
Even though we're children at this time, like that sun damage when we were younger still stays with us into our adulthood.
Oh yeah, forever.
Really?
So the pigment changes that you see in your skin are typically like a compiled effect of all the years showing up at once. And that's why we don't see it necessarily so young. We see it come up in our 30s, really. 30 to 35, I think, is the biggest dramatic change that you see in your skin. And then again in 40 and 40 to 5. So every 5 years after 30, you're starting to see what you've done at, you know, 7 to 10 to 18. 18 is a great age for people to start. My 13-year-old has a religious kind of process that she does for her skincare that was all her own. She came to me and I'm really conscious to not kind of push that on her because I want her to be able to talk to me about it. But her regime is more solid than most adults. And that is kind of funny, but that is,
you're like, that's my girl.
Yeah. And that's her friend group. They're all interested like that. I mean, that wasn't a thing when I was a kid.
No, nothing compared to like the toner, the serum. Growing up, we never talked about like how the kids are today.
Yeah. And that's a lot of social media.
So say we did have sun damage when we were younger and now we're trying to correct it. We're about to be 30. We're in our 30s. Someone comes to you. What would be the first steps that you let them know like to reverse that? Like, what do we start doing?
Hey, have you heard about Vagaro? It's the best place to book hair appointments, facials, and even workout classes. They have a huge marketplace where you can find local beauty, wellness, and fitness businesses that fit your exact needs. Plus, with the Vagaro app, you can book services and classes whenever, wherever. Who knows? Your new favorite self-care business could be a simple search away. Download the Vagaro app. That's V-A-G-A-R-O to get started today.
First thing that I talk to them about is an SPF. They need to be wearing an SPF every day, 365 days a year. And I think that that's kind of a hard change, oddly enough. But the reason why is because before we can do anything, we have to protect the skin. A lot of the treatments that exist to help with the pigmentation can make you photosensitive. So it can actually make it worse. So like even cleansers that have salicylic acid in it to treat acne, they're photosensitizing agents inside of that. And so because of that, that's why we start backwards with the SPF and then work our way towards treatments to make sure that that person really understands just how important it is to protect your skin. Because yes, superficially we're interested with the pigmentation, but skin cancer, that is like the number one cancer in the world. And everybody is constantly exposing their skin, so they don't necessarily think about an acid that they're putting on their face making some sort of full systemic effect on their body because of that photosensitizing property.
Something that's in our cleansers can make it worse. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes. You really shouldn't be using any form of acid.
As a cleanser.
Not even as a cleanser. You shouldn't just be using any form of acid if you're not going to wear an SPF, because it makes your skin more sensitive to the sunlight. And the sunlight is what causes all of that damage. SPF, we call that Bible in our business. That's Bible first. Then we go backwards. So from there, you can add in ampules, acids, cleansers. But it really does start with SPF to protect your skin.
Okay. And what facial SPF do you recommend?
I love the Circadian Light Day 37, and it's an SPF 37, and I have been using it for probably 15 years. I have never gotten a burn when I've worn it, and I've been in South America and Hawaii. I've used it on my kids head to toe. That stuff is amazing. You can order it through Circadia on their website, but there are a lot of other really great professional SPFs. I strongly suggest an SPF of 30 at least daily, and I don't think there's anything wrong with wearing it in your makeup too. It's just that it's not the same thing as actually wearing an SPF.
And when we are wearing makeup, do we do the sunscreen before like the moisturizer?
And so I normally put it on very last on top, just because if you have a physical sunscreen, there can be minerals on top of that. And if you're layering the moisturizers in the opposite way, it can inhibit the actual purpose of the moisturizer. So SPF should be on top unless they state otherwise.
Okay. So after our facial routine, sunscreen and then makeup. Got it. So I was going to be like, if I put sunscreen on after I do my makeup, then it's like my makeup's ruined, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Noted. That's good to know.
Sunscreen is really important. It is really the holy grail. Vitamin C, vitamin A, and vitamin E together. Those are the trinity that go next to it. But when it comes back to breaking it down to a science, I think with any esthetician or any professional in the cosmetology field in general, part of that is just explaining that process to the client so that they understand and know why we're recommending those changes and those products. It's not necessarily part of marketing or sales that we're trying to really push something for them, but we want them to understand the treatment plan too afterward. It really is about creating a good connection, working connection off of trust with your clients. And I feel like, unfortunately, if people don't understand that science side, it really does seem like a heavy push for you to buy something.
Right. Okay, so we are in 2023. The technology is insane. What advanced equipment, products, technologies are being used these days?
When it comes to products, I love seeing the polypeptides that are heavily marketed right now. It's a strong amino acid chain, which is great for fighting sun damage, free radicals, and irritation. So we're going to see, I think, a lot more of that in our products. But I think when it comes to the machinery, what I'm most excited about is really seeing people take off with the combination of radio wave frequency and laser combination. It can be used to tighten the skin. It can be used in a controlled way to melt fat pockets and contour. We use it a lot of times in body slimming treatments. So it's a really cool piece of technology that's just becoming more discussed, I think.
It's just so crazy that a piece of technology can like take away fat.
Oh yeah, I know. Like tighten me up over here, contour me over there, like have a snatched jawline. For some people, like if you have a more round face, that can make you very paranoid. And some people get fillers or even contemplate surgery. And then the fact that there's something that's an alternative that's not a surgical treatment and it's not very expensive is nice to have as an alternative.
And is that permanent?
Nothing is permanent in this world. It's as long as you maintain it, because our skin is always continuing to age. So we have to continue to stay up on it. I mean, it's never going to be the same as surgery, but not everybody is looking for that, you know, 50% change. Some people just are happy with 25-35%, especially if you're wanting to age just a little bit more gracefully.
What else do we see in the future? We talk about like the technologies and laser and then polypeptides. Anything else that you see that will be coming to the market soon?
I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of different hydrodermabrasion systems as well that are maybe coupled with microcurrents. I think pretty much Hydrafacial has capitalized on their name, so everybody knows what a hydrofacial is. So hydrodermabrasion is basically the same thing as a hydrofacial, just different companies coming up with their own model. But what I have seen a couple of companies starting to market is the combination of that hydrodermabrasion and microcurrent treatments. And microcurrent treatments are traditionally used to tighten and tone the skin. It's called the non-surgical facelift. However, not only does it just tighten and tone the skin, it helps restore and detoxify the skin. So if you couple that with a service like a hydrodermabrasion that can leave you puffy, red, mildly irritated, you're going to see clients leaving with glowing skin that is calm and uniform, that's really hydrated and not patchy, which is, I think, everybody's idea of red carpet skin, right? It just glows. And so that is, for me, that would probably be my favorite facial treatment that I could have.
Oh, wow. So that you see is coming up as like a competitor to the hydrofacial.
A competitor and just like an addition to that treatment. I mean, my goal for our beauty trend that we're trying to create is ditch so much of the products. There's a kind of a product obsession happening with, again, social media, TikTok trends. And I just see mountains of different products that people are using to try and alleviate their skincare issues without realizing that they're irritating them. So I'm hoping that just like everybody ditched Kylie Skin's care, everybody was throwing it away. I'm hoping that they're going to throw away the tons of products that they're using in conjunction. They're just over-treating their skin. Sometimes less really is more, and there is no such thing as a magical product. So just more education, that patience. It takes time. Your skin didn't get that way overnight, and it's going to take a little bit of time to correct. So let's stop over-treating it.
I'd love to hear your perspective of which skincare brand that you would recommend us to use.
I mean, I always am going to go for the professional lines, and people always ask why, what's the difference? We have clients that come in all the time and say, what can I buy at Ulta? The best professional opinion, it's not that we're trying to knock a brand. It's just that we're masters of what we work with. So we know what works best for us and what we can get results for clients. The difference between department stores a lot of times versus professional skincare is the quality of the cosmeceutical and the percentage of the active ingredient in it. So yes, sometimes the professional product is a little bit more, but it also sometimes lasts a lot longer and will give you the results that you're looking for without having to buy multiple other items. So just consult an expert, you know, go to the pro and try and stay with what they're suggesting to you. I try and stay away from anything I can get at Costco or Ulta or things like that. And I'll go more for, again, a professional line every time because they are really interested in selling you their product. They definitely have a gain off of it, but they know exactly how it works. And typically it's not very long before you see the results that you're supposed to. It is trial and error. And even in some of the lines that I love, there are products that I can't use. Like it just doesn't work for me. But that doesn't mean that it's not going to work for somebody else. So patience.
It's a reminder also that everyone's skin is different. So like what may work for someone that you follow on TikTok may not work for you. And I know I've learned that firsthand.
Oh yeah. I mean, my dad was an esthetician. The best cleanser he ever used in moisturizer was water. Anytime you gave him a professional product or a moisturizer, he broke out. And I just stopped trying to fix it. There wasn't really anything that he was trying to treat. He didn't have any crazy pigmentation or breakouts. But anytime, and even if he stuck with a regimen for a month or longer, it was more irritating than just what his natural state of his skin was. So everybody is so dramatically different.
That's so interesting. So it's just, you can get wrapped up in the TikTok of having this cool all-step skincare routine, but like exactly like you said, less is more.
Sometimes it really is.
I kind of want to bring you back to your roots and I want to talk more about nail care. We haven't really talked about that on here.
I wish it was more complicated than it is, but honestly, I'd still say less is more. I think a lot of people, there's so many enhancements you can do to your nails. The most important thing with nail health is making sure that your cuticles, you're not over trimming them. Your cuticles are there. And I see people that go in every other week to the nail salon and just go to town and just over nip and take off too much of that skin. And it can make you inflamed and get hangnails chronically from it. And you can even get infections if you over nip. Once a month is more than enough. Some people just really don't like it at all. You can always use a cuticle oil and massage your cuticles, and that can help exfoliate that skin in a more gentle manner than going to town on it. Between that and making sure that you are not using the most abrasive nail file and going to town back and forth and shredding your nail. You always just want to use a little bit softer file. Glass files are my favorite, and just gently file them so that you're not tearing that nail apart.
Glass file?
Oh yeah. Sometimes you even see them like at Fred Meyer at the stand. It's a glass, literal glass file, and it's so soft. People, I don't think they think to use it on their nails, but that's what they're for. Otherwise, those emery boards that you can feel that heavy grit, most of the time it's too aggressive for your nail. And when you file it, you'll start to see your nail come off in little strings of in tearing, and that shouldn't happen.
I know for a while when I was in high school, we would take like the hair, skin, and nails gummy. And like, I don't even know if that really helps. Like, what professional advice can you give us to make our nails grow strong and healthy?
The hair, skin, and nails is really popular. It's a lot of vitamin B and your omegas, and you can get that independently. You don't have to get it from that vitamin source. A really good quality B12 is great for your nails, and fish oil. Fish oil or krill oil will help your hair, your skin, and your nails. So there's not one thing that our body and our skin that's all keratin, right? So when we take supplements that are going to enhance our keratin content, then it's going to always make its way down to our nails too. But that's why people notice such a huge drastic difference when they take the prenatal vitamins, because it's packed full of all those things that are going to help support you and your baby. And normally when we're pregnant, we'll see our hair just start getting stringy and thin and our nails chip and break. And that's what's going to help sustain it too.
Would it be appropriate to take a prenatal when you're not pregnant for the hair and nail growth?
Yeah, a lot of people continue to take them. It's just a very complex multivitamin specifically made to fortify what we're losing in our body.
But that wouldn't make you like more fertile, would it?
I don't know, actually. I was like, I don't know. I've never been asked that question.
I don't want to tell the listeners, like, yeah, start taking it. And then like they start having a lot of baby. I mean, if that's what they're looking for, but.
I don't know that it's going to make you more fertile. I definitely would consult with a doctor first before if you're worried about that. But always birth control, right?
Right.
That's one of the reasons why you can't find rosemary oil right now, is because people are obsessed with rosemary oil that's trending all over social. At least here in our local city, we can't find it. But rosemary oil is supposed to help your hair grow stronger and fuller. I mean, I have a coworker who's using it and she swears by it. But that and photolight therapy, red photolight therapy, that's known to help hair growth. So you're seeing the little caps that are red photolight therapy. I saw one sold at Walgreens the other day. I was like, what? This is crazy.
Yeah, wait. So you put this cap on your head?
Yeah. So it's like almost like a beanie, it looks like, but it has red photolight therapy diodes inside of the hat. And so it's made specifically to help restore hair growth. They have hair restoration clinics that will do a professional strength light as well. And even estheticians will use it for skincare. And if you want to put the light on your head, we can, but it's obviously not what we're going for. But yeah, the combination of the rosemary oil and the red photolight therapy is big right now in Portland.
Would that beanie be more for men or women?
Both. I mean, I think guys are less likely to talk to women about it. They're more likely to seek direct help in a clinic that is specializing for that. But it's kind of a joke that we have every day. Somebody walks in and I was like, I smell the rosemary oil. The clients are in. They're all trying it because it's very strong, you know, so you can smell it.
Like a good or bad scent?
I think it depends on how much they use it. Everything sparingly is not too bad. But when you have like 30 people coming in because they've all decided to do rosemary oil together, you're like,
but like, doesn't that make your hair greasy?
Oh yeah.
So like, not only are you smelling rosemary, but you've got to be like, oh my God, your hair is a grease pit.
Yeah. Since the students have been doing it, I don't think they care much because they're at the beginning phase of their training. So they're getting facials all the time and they're not looking very glam or put together at this point. So I don't think they care. But yeah, my coworker, she swears by it. And even if you shower it out, it has such a strong effect and it attaches itself to the hair that there's still sometimes some lingering smells from it. In general, for nail care, just like with skincare, most of the times before you recognize that something serious is going on in your body, oddly enough, you see it in your nails. Your nails losing their strength, getting really brittle, any kind of ridges or spots appearing in it, it's a pretty big indicator that something serious is happening.
Why is the nail the first indicator for that?
Well, I think just like our hair and our skin, we take it for granted. We look at the cosmetic side of it, but when you think about it from a systemic point of view, our body is going to regulate and take what it needs, nutrients, water, and everything, and direct it to the areas that it needs first, right? So let's say we're very dehydrated, it's going to take it from our skin, right? You see the same things coming up in your nails. You're going to lose that flexibility, so the nail becomes more brittle. Or, for example, like people that have really poor circulation, their fingers and nails will start turning purple and blue, and sometimes that's how they find out they have some sort of congestive heart failure issue or heart issue in general that they have become more concerned with and not realizing, like, hey, that blue nail tip, that's an indicator that something else is going on for you. You should probably go to a doctor and check it out.
I mean, it's crazy that our bodies can, like, give us signs.
Starts telling you in a very subtle way, and then it starts screaming. By the time I think we notice it, I don't know about you, but by the time I realized I was sick, because I went through a phase where I was really sick, even just stress in my body, I had my hair was falling out, my skin was terrible, my nails wouldn't grow past the ends of my fingertips, they would just break, and it was painful. And that's when I was just like, oh my gosh, maybe there's nothing medically wrong with me, but the stress is taking it's wreaking havoc on my body. And I mean, I've even heard of people saying things with their teeth too. They have weird teeth things that happened when they were pregnant and their baby was like taking all the calcium from the teeth and they got little like white cavities. And I was just like, this is crazy, but it just shows you how our body works. It's like a very sophisticated computer system, and we all have built-in backups, and they're all little alarms like telling us that something else is going on. So stress, dehydration, too much alcohol consumption, even coffee. I mean, like, you can see coffee and caffeine dehydration in people's skin is insane.
You know, one thing that I've also known by doing this podcast, I've learned so much. But one thing I really learned is how everything truly connects in our body. We just got to take care of ourselves, self-care.
Self-care and just being in tune with your own body. Like, you know what is normal for you. So when other people try and tell you that something's off, even if you're like, no, it's not like me for my legs to be this dry. I feel very dry. My skin is very dry. Then you're like, could it be a larger problem? And, you know, a lot of people go quick to the medical side to take pills and prescriptions for simple things, like even little infections. And they don't realize that how that taxing that can be on our entire body, not just our skin.
Well, Monique, before I let you go, we're going to play a quick game. I play this on every podcast. It is called Taylor's Would You Rather. And I made you 7 Would You Rather questions. But the deal is you only have 3 seconds to choose one or the other.
Okay.
Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Number one, would you rather have very dry skin or very oily skin?
Very oily skin.
Would you rather skip washing your face for the entire day or skip wearing sunscreen for the entire day?
Skip washing my face.
I knew you were going to say that. After our talk on that, you're like, okay. Number three, would you rather have green skin or would you rather have gold sparkly skin?
Gold sparkly skin.
Would you rather have very intense crow's feet or very intense smile lines?
Crow's feet.
Would you rather have a mud facial or would you rather have a vampire facial?
Vampire facial.
Ooh, okay, 2 more. Would you rather get an unlimited amount of massages for a year or an unlimited amount of facials?
I think facials.
Last one. Would you rather have your moisturizer smell like cheese or smell like dog food?
Probably dog food.
Either or, you're smelling bad. You need to put a little perfume on. Monique, thank you so much for joining me and giving all your insight on our face, our skin, our nails. I mean, we touched a little bit of it all.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was really fun.
Our goal is to always give you the content you didn't know you needed to know and to make sure you're always on point. I'm Taylor Burke. Thank you for listening.